What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, 6 months ago, Donald Trump addressed the possibility that North Korean missiles could reach the United States. It won't happen, he said. How the U.S. underestimated North Korea. And few states have benefited so dramatically from the expansion of Medicaid as Kentucky. So why is the man leading the charge to roll it back, a senator from Kentucky? It's Thursday, July 6th.
Hello?
David.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, it's Michael Barbaro.
Good to talk to you.
Where are you exactly?
I am in the United Lounge at Newark Airport.
On your way to?
To Hamburg for the G20 summit.
We've got a bunch of questions to get through. This is pretty interesting stuff. Although I'm now wondering about this small child right near David.
You're wondering about what?
About the proximity of a small child near you in the United Club.
Yeah. Well.
Any way to get that kid on a flight to Germany right now?
I think the child's father just walked away with her.
They'll come back with some food in a minute. All right, let's jump in. David Sanger, what did North Korea accomplish with this missile test?
They accomplished something that they've been talking about for years, which was a missile that could plausibly reach American shores, the American mainland. But they did it in a very ingenious way, something they've been doing in recent months, which is they shot it way up into outer space, 1,700 miles up, and had it come down at a very steep parabola, just as an intercontinental ballistic missile would. In a way that would make it very hard for the United States to shoot down.
David, how far ahead is North Korea of where we thought North Korea was based on the distance that this missile traveled? In other words, how much of a surprise was this?
The surprise here is all in the timing, not in the accomplishment. The United States has consistently underestimated the speed at which North Korea would move up the ladder of its technology. I think there's going to be a lot of study about why the United States got this wrong. You know, we all have grown up on one giant intelligence failure, Iraq, where the intelligence community overestimated Saddam Hussein's ability to build a nuclear weapon and perhaps to deliver it. What we forget in the middle of that is that there have been many nuclear and missile intelligence failures. But almost all of the other ones pre-Iraq went in the other direction, that we underestimated countries' capability. So we underestimated how quickly the Soviets would be able to do this and set off their own nuclear weapon in 1949. We underestimated how long it would take the Chinese in the early 60s. We underestimated how long it would take the Indians in the 70s and the Pakistanis in the 80s. But we forget that history because the most recent mistake we've made was in the other direction.
David, why do you think we're so prone to underestimating foreign countries' nuclear capabilities?
Because nothing is more secret within a country than how they are doing in their missile and their nuclear technology and in merging those two technologies. They keep this very well hidden, and North Korea is a particularly hard target.
What happens now? What does the United States do, given this advancement in the North Korean technology?
Well, Michael, as we've discussed before, North Korea is the land of lousy options, right? Every incremental advance the North Koreans have made have left the president to make a really tough decision. And that decision is, what's the worst thing that you could do here? Live with this incremental improvement, or take a set of actions that could end up in a retaliation against Seoul, a city of 10 million people, a close U.S. ally, many more people living in the immediate suburbs of that, And everybody has determined in the end that the cost isn't worth the benefit. Mm-hmm. Well, Kim Jong-un's figured this out as well. And so he has come to the determination that the threats are all pretty empty, that the United States in the end isn't going to take military action against him because they're afraid of the consequences, mm-hmm. that the Chinese in the end aren't going to cut off his oil because they're afraid of chaos on their border if North Korea collapses. So he has played a very weak hand incredibly well. Michael, hold on a sec. I'm going to walk away from the returning kids here. We'll see how we do. Okay, tell me how the reception is here. Good?
Good.
Good.
And David, we've been talking around this a little bit, but if I'm a listener, this is probably my number one question. How much do we need to worry now that a nuclear weapon will be launched from North Korea to the United States?
I don't think you need to worry that one day Kim Jong-un is going to wake up and say, I'm going to start nuclear war with the United States. He knows what would happen in the ensuing 45 minutes to an hour. Hmm. And remember, it's his regime he wants to protect. My biggest concern, Michael, actually isn't a North Korea that is aggressively going after the United States. It's a North Korea in which there's a small conflict that turns to a larger one and goes nuclear, or a North Korea that's in collapse. And somebody loyal to Kim Jong-un, who's grown up in that propaganda environment for decades, suddenly is concerned that the whole country is going down in flames and he's going to take someone out with it.
And hits the launch button.
That's right. We didn't really worry about this for the Soviet Union because while we were concerned about the nuclear arms race and we were concerned about being destroyed, we fundamentally believe they had good control over their nuclear weapons. And even India and Pakistan, we were more worried about them going after each other than going after us. But in North Korea's case, we don't understand who's in control of their weapons. So that's my biggest worry. My biggest worry is what goes wrong if the place appears to be in mid-collapse.
David, thank you very much, and have a safe trip to Germany, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks very much, Michael.
Okay, bye. On Wednesday, in response to North Korea's missile test, the United States and South Korea conducted a joint military exercise that involved firing an undisclosed number of ballistic missiles into the sea. After the test, the top American commander in South Korea, General Vincent Brooks, said that, quote, self-restraint is all that is keeping the U.S. and South Korea from going to war with the North. We'll be right back.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for The New York Times. I grew up in Texas, on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that voters don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray. And that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, especially in such a critical election year. And that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at the New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to the New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Senate Republicans have a particularly complicated challenge facing them as they try to pass their health care bill. After years of promising to repeal Obamacare, many constituents back in their home states have come to depend on it, like it or not. Nowhere is that tension and contradiction more apparent than in Kentucky, with its two Republican senators and its relationship to Medicaid.
You know, Kentucky is really a showpiece for the expansion of Medicaid under Obamacare.
Cheryl Stolberg has been reporting from Kentucky.
Right now, one in three Kentuckians, nearly one in three, is on Medicaid. And of those, about a third get Medicaid through the expansion. And you know, Michael, in some poor eastern Kentucky Appalachia counties, more than 60% of people are on Medicaid. Now, Kentucky also is struggling with the opioid epidemic, and you've got to remember, Kentucky is a very poor state. It's a state that has been decimated. job losses have just been abysmal, crushing, as a result of the coal downturn. So all these things come together to make Kentucky kind of a crucible for this debate.
So that sounds like a large number of people who got on Medicaid through the Affordable Care Act. Do you know how many it is?
Roughly 400,000, maybe a little bit less than 400,000.
And how has the Medicaid expansion of the Affordable Care Act worked in Kentucky? What does it look like?
Well, I guess I might say it looks like a woman I met called Kathy Collins.
Hello.
Hi, is this Kathy?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Kathy, it's Michael Barbaro from the New York Times. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm really grateful to you for spending some time with us, so thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And my colleague, Cheryl Stolberg, sends her best, too. She gave me your phone number.
Okay. I like Cheryl. She's nice.
Kathy was a patient at a hospital in Whitesburg, Kentucky, a tiny little city in eastern Kentucky, and she has lupus, an autoimmune disease.
Well, it took them several years to diagnose it. The proper diagnosis came in 2010, but I got sick in 2005.
And how did you know you were sick? What are the symptoms of lupus?
I broke out in large welts. My joints started swelling, just achy and feverish. Almost like the flu, but I had welts everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's very painful.
Did you have health insurance when you were diagnosed with lupus?
No.
And so how did you get health insurance, and how were you treated?
I applied for a COBRA policy.
Okay.
And I had it for a year.
And that's expensive.
It was very expensive. If it hadn't been for my dad or my family helping me, I wouldn't have been able to afford my medicine.
And then what happened? It sounds like you then got to Medicaid. How did that work?
The hospital actually referred me to go and put in an application for Medicaid. And when I was approved, I was surprised, but I was thankful.
Why were you surprised?
I didn't think I'd be approved.
Hmm.
I was afraid I'd be a little bit above of what the limit was.
Got it. Do you have a job? Do you have income?
No, sir. I'm disabled. The lupus and the other diseases have disabled me.
Got it. What does your income look like? It sounds like you have been ill for long enough that you have not been able to work. So what are your sources of income?
I draw disabled Social Security. You would be shocked to know the amount.
meaning it's not that much?
No, it's not. I couldn't pay rent and utilities and buy groceries on what I draw. There's no way. I'm actually living with my sister because I lost my independence. When I got sick and had to go on disability, I had to move in with my sister because I couldn't support myself.
And that is why you qualified for Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act?
Yes.
And how would you say that Medicaid has been for you?
It's been a lifesaver. It's definitely been a lifesaver.
So I want to ask you just a little bit about politics because of the healthcare debate that's going on in this country. Have you voted for your two senators, Senator Mitch McConnell and Senator Rand Paul?
I voted for Mitch McConnell, but not Rand Paul.
So Cheryl, I want to talk about Kentucky's senators who are at the center of this debate over healthcare. What are their positions towards Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act?
Senator Mitch McConnell is the Republican leader of the Senate, and right now it's his job to try to push through a repeal of the Affordable Care Act.
The status quo is simply unsustainable. It'll be dealt with in one of two ways. Either Republicans will agree and change the status quo, or the markets will continue to collapse.
And under the Senate bill, the bill would undo much of the Medicaid expansion.
We need to come up with a solution. The American people elected us to do that, and we're working hard to get there. Thanks a lot.
He's kind of the wrangler, right? He's got to pull together both sides of his party, the moderates who are worried that rolling this back too much is going to hurt people in their state, and the conservatives who are worried that the Senate bill doesn't do enough to cut costs.
It is a conundrum. That's why we should vote on the one thing that we all agreed on. About a year ago, we voted on clean repeal.
Now let's go to Senator number two, the leader of the pack among those conservative critics, Senator Rand Paul. He might be called a free market conservative. He's a libertarian, and he wants even deeper cuts than those that would be made in the bill Senator McConnell is shepherding and trying to get Republican agreement on.
The current Medicaid is unfunded, and then we're going to add new entitlement programs to that. If you really want to have Medicaid for everyone in all these states, you should be honest with the people, and you should double or triple the state income tax and double or triple the sales tax. Now, I'm not for that, but that's what it would take if you were honest. Instead, we say, oh, federal government's going to pay for it. Federal government has no money. We borrow $1 million a minute, so it's just dishonest accounting.
I think what they represent is sort of the Republican Party fighting with itself. It's sort of got this internal battle going on, and they don't seem to know quite how to resolve it. It's why Senator McConnell had to pull the health care bill from the Senate floor, because he didn't have the votes to pass it.
So I guess we have to ask this inevitable question here. If, as the numbers you describe suggest, the expansion of Medicaid in Kentucky has been numerically a success, and so many people who didn't have insurance now get their insurance through Medicaid in Kentucky under the Affordable Care Act, why are the senior elected officials in the state trying to roll that back? How does that work?
Well, it costs money. It costs the taxpayers money, and that's a concern. In fact, the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities has estimated that Kentucky would have to raise taxes or cut other parts of its budget by $16 billion over 10 years in order to maintain Kentucky Medicaid the way it is.
So,
if the federal funding withered.
And what about Kentucky residents you've spoken to who rely on this expanded Medicaid program under the Affordable Care Act? What do they say about their elected officials' determination to rein in the spending and potentially take action that might kick them off of Medicaid?
Well, obviously they're worried, but I have to say, Michael, that when people are really struggling to get by, they're not always paying such close attention to politics.
I don't really. Until something comes up, and then, you know, I really don't. It just upsets me so much that I just don't watch it.
Well, what do you think of Senator McConnell being the author, you know, the main driving force behind this Senate bill that would cut the expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act that you now rely on for your lupus?
I'm very disappointed. And he's also lost my support. And he's no good for Kentucky.
Were you aware of how deeply involved he has been in this plan to roll back Medicaid?
Not until recently.
Okay. And how did you learn about it?
Actually, Cheryl asked me about it.
Ah, so from the New York Times.
Yes.
So, is what we're talking about voters who don't quite see the connection between the policy and the officials in Washington who they have elected? Is that essentially what this boils down to?
I think it is what it boils down to. People in states like Kentucky have voted against their self-interest.
At the time, I don't recall him that being part of his campaign. I could be wrong, but I don't think it was. And I thought he would be good for us because, you know, he's been here. He knows everything about Kentucky. And he also knows the things about the poor people of Kentucky. He's definitely lost my support and my vote.
It'll be interesting to see what happens if these bills go through and they lose their health care and they wake up and say, wow, you know, we voted for this. And guess what? We don't have health insurance anymore.
Kathy, what do you want to see for the future of Medicaid? What do you want to see happen to it?
I think they should leave it alone. Leave it like it is. Because it is taking care of people that desperately need it. And without it, there's going to be very sick people that can't seek treatment because They have no way of paying for it.
And so what do you want these two senators in Kentucky to do, Senator McConnell and Senator Paul?
I want them to fight for Kentucky, to fight to keep it the way it is, to keep Obamacare the way it is. If they have to make a few changes, maybe little changes, not high-dollar changes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it'd be best if they just leave it alone.
Well, Kathy, thank you very much. I wish you the best.
Thank you.
In your health and in your life. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, honey, thank you.
Okay, bye. The Senate debate over the future of Medicaid and American healthcare will resume when lawmakers return from their 10-day 4th of July recess. Senator McConnell is still pushing for a vote to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. But President Trump is now proposing that the Senate might consider abandoning that plan. If Republican senators are unable to pass what they are working on now, he tweeted over the weekend, they should immediately repeal and then replace at a later date. That's a reversal from earlier this year. The Times reports that Senator McConnell and House Speaker Paul Ryan had both originally supported the repeal now, replace later approach, until President Trump publicly demanded that they be done together after his election in January.
It'll be repeal and replace. It will be essentially simultaneously. It will be various segments, you understand, but will most likely be on the same day or the same week, but probably the same day, could be the same hour.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.